Welcome to Burnside at Home, and thank you for joining with us today and listening to our service. Today in church, there's something different. The Reverend Ross Collins from Ballywatt Congregation is coming to take the service. Therefore, there's no pre-recorded service this week for you to listen to. But this week has been a special refresh week in our General Assembly, and the moderator has recorded a service for today, which you can now listen to. It begins with a reading which is read by the Reverend Liz Hughes, who is retired minister from Whitehead Congregation, and then the moderator will preach his sermon. This will also be available as a video to watch on the website, and then during the week the Beside the Burn Bible studies will be based on this sermon. Later on in the day you will then also be able to watch a recorded service of Ross preaching in Burnside, and that will be available on Sunday evening on the website. So thank you very much once again for joining with us today to worship in this way, and I hope that you enjoy this service from the moderator on our telephone line and podcast. Thank you.
Taking up our Bible reading from Matthew chapter 9 at verse 27. As Jesus went on from there, two blind men followed him, calling out, "Have mercy on us, Son of David." When he had gone indoors, the blind men came to him, and he asked them, "Do you believe that I am able to do this?" "Yes, Lord," they replied. Then he touched their eyes and said, "According to your faith, let it be done to you." And their sight was restored. Jesus warned them sternly, "See that no one knows about this." But they went out and spread the news about him all over the region. While they were going out, a man who was demon-possessed and could not talk was brought to Jesus. And when the demon was driven out, the man who had been mute spoke. The crowd was amazed and said, "Nothing like this has ever been seen in Israel." But the Pharisees said, "It is by the prince of demons that he drives out demons." Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and illness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field."
My wife, Zoe, tells me that I don't always see colour the same way that most people do. And of course, she's right. Now, I don't think I'm colourblind, but somehow I can't make the connection between what colours go well together and which colours clash horribly. She does what she can to protect me from this almost daily disaster, and how grateful I am for that. I can look and look, but somehow not see. Let's look and see what Jesus said and the encounter that he had with the crowds in Matthew chapter 9, verse 36. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." In verse 36, Jesus saw the crowds. He didn't just look at them and count them and analyze their numbers. He saw them. He saw them for the multiple life stories that they represented. He had a sense of them, a feeling for them. He had insight into their problems and their aspirations, their joys and their sorrows, their confidences and their insecurities, the accuracies and the misapprehensions of their take on the world. He saw them. He knew them. He felt the cost to him of their alienation from God. Jesus saw the crowds. Now, in this short passage before us today, Jesus is speaking after a series of encounters of various kinds that he had with people who, for one reason or another, were deeply broken. There was a paralyzed man lying on a mat, and he was healed. But of course, in doing so, the doubters about Jesus' authority to forgive sins were simply confronted and confounded. They were like sheep without good shepherds. The people were being led astray this way and that. They didn't know the truth. They didn't recognize it even when it was right before their eyes. And in the verses before us, this despised, corrupt, and thieving embezzler invited Jesus to dinner one day, who, when he was criticized for his choice of friends, said, "Well, of course, you don't need a doctor if you're healthy, only if you're ill." He had compassion on a man whom everyone else absolutely despised and hated. In fact, that same despised and corrupt tax collector ultimately wrote this very gospel. It's Matthew's own testimony, his own story, his own encounter with Jesus, which evidently changed his life. When the appropriateness of this teaching as a rabbi was questioned by religious people whom Jesus encountered, he said, "Well, it's like this. New wine, you know, it belongs in a new wineskin. I'm not going to sew patches to cover up the holes on your old religion. I'm going to do something completely new here." So when a leader of that old, bankrupt, full of holes religion told him tearfully and from his heart that his daughter had died, this was a moment of terrible grief, Jesus, with great care, took her lifeless hand, and she got up. What a great clue to point to this new thing that Jesus was doing, this new religion, this new way of life. A blind man was given his sight, as if to say, "Well, the world is sightless and it needs to see." A man who couldn't speak was enabled to talk, as if to say, "The world needs to hear and understand God speaking." And people were amazed at Jesus' teaching and his actions. So Jesus saw the crowds. He knew the texture of the community that he was among, fearful of their religious leaders, oppressed by corrupt and dishonest officials, distraught by illness and disability, in the grip of multiple silly superstitions. He saw the crowds. Before the church really does anything effective, it needs to see the crowds. It needs to understand them. This is the very first principle of Christian mission, of course, the very first task we must give ourselves, to see the crowds. What are they like? What are their fears, those crowds who live around us? What are their needs? What might good news look like for those crowds? So to the elders and leaders among you, I suggest today that you get out a map and draw a circle around your church building. Now, the circle could be just half a mile across if you're living in a city, or maybe 10 miles across or more if you're in the countryside. But nonetheless, ask yourself the question, who lives and works in that circle? Are there schools there? Are there shops in that circle around your building? Who owns the shops? Do you know them? Have you called in and said hello? Have you asked them how they're doing in the pandemic? They're the crowds. Learn to see them if you hope to reach them, and then learn to love them if you want to keep at it long after the excitement of your outreach event or evangelistic campaign is but a fading memory. Secondly, also in verse 36 of this chapter, having seen the crowds, Jesus had compassion on them. Now, compassion means to suffer with. Jesus entered into their story of angst, so that a simple dinner with a tax collector became nothing less than a revolutionary act. Jesus was completely unafraid to do it and utterly unconcerned about the disapproving reactions of those who thought he was simply a disgrace because he had compassion. In fact, it was his compassion which drove him to do these seemingly unthinkable things. His analysis of the crowds in this verse was that they were, as he puts it, harassed and helpless. They were like sheep without a shepherd, he says. Now, they had plenty of shepherds. It's just that they weren't very good. Their religious shepherds were motivated much more by self-preservation than God's glorification, more by their own self-satisfaction than heartfelt compassion, such as Jesus demonstrated. But Jesus had compassion and showed them what a really good shepherd looks like. And a good shepherd would take them in their helpless and blind state and bless them with sight. A good shepherd would reach into their harassed and voiceless lives and give them words to speak with joy. A good shepherd would seek them out in their lostness and rescue them and bring them home. And let's not lose the force of this saying of Jesus. Sheep need shepherds. If they don't have shepherds, they become what he describes, harassed and helpless. There is, in fact, a causal link between the absence of good shepherds and the fragmentation of healthy living in any society. That's what the absence of good shepherds produces. Harassed means stressed, hassled, beleaguered, worried. Helpless, well, that means stranded or abandoned or destitute or deserted. So the gift of God to the world through his church, through you in fact, is the vital ministry of good shepherds. And nobody else is going to do it but us. This is more than a gift. This is in fact the way that God rescues the broken. Thirdly, Jesus saw what needed to be done in verse 37 of this chapter. He said this, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few." How often do we in our churches adopt a defensive stance in face of everything that's happening around us? How often do we say, well, do you know, I'm not too sure about the harvest around us, spiritually speaking. There's so much opposition to us out there. People think we're all sorts of things. They think we're homophobic. They think we're transphobic. They think we're medieval. They think we're weird because we believe in a supernatural God. I just don't know if the harvest is plentiful at all. In fact, maybe the harvest is hopeless. So any laborers that we have the capacity to find and to push out, well, maybe they would be better off used in here looking after us, not out there looking after them. Now, of course, we understand why some of us might think that way. And it's because we feel that way. And we feel that way because it's just a relentless and constant message that we get bombarded with. But please understand this. This is neither what Jesus said nor did. The harvest is plentiful, he said, if there's sin around us. The harvest is plentiful if people are broken around us. The harvest is plentiful if in those circles that we've described, our lawmakers don't know right from wrong. The harvest is plentiful if our critics tell us that we're simply deluded. The harvest is plentiful if we're on the wrong side of history, whatever that means. In fact, these realities define the harvest. They say there is a world in desperate need of redemption out there. The harvest is indeed plentiful. So, how does it feel to be one of the laborers called into this harvest field? Now, you might well say to me, oh, moderator, we have a minister who does that for us, and we pay for them, and we pay them a salary, and we provide a house for them, and we'll be very supportive of them as they do this on our behalf. And of course, those things are good. Of course they are. And we're so grateful that we have ministers and pastors who work with us. But look for a moment at what Jesus really tells his friends to do when faced with this complicated harvest field in that circle around us. He says, "Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." That's in verse 38. Now, do you see what Jesus really asks for here? Because the harvest field is so plentiful, complicated, yes, but plentiful. Jesus says, pray that God would solve this. He doesn't say, and in the light of these very challenging circumstances, we agree to pay a minister. He says, ask the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest field. As God surveys the crazy and pitted landscape of this secular field with its factional interests and its skewed world views, with its diseased and grieving peoples and bombed and starved to the point of despair, abused and exploited by the selfless interests of the unscrupulous, he says, all of this is mine, and I love it. I love these people. This is what I sent my boy to rescue. Yes, the worst of it, the worst of them. This is why he died. He died for them. This is my harvest field. And because it's mine, I went to these extraordinary lengths to redeem it. It's not your harvest field. It's his. What's in that circle isn't your challenge primarily. It's his. The workers who go out into that harvest field aren't your workers. They're his. I wonder if you've ever found yourself to be the answer to your own prayers. This is a dangerous kind of prayer to pray in verse 37. Now, we could decommission it, of course, and make it safe. You know, if the prayer was, well, we'll send out our minister to do this for us, that would probably produce something apart from making him very tired or her exhausted. And knowing most of the ministers in this church as I do, they would work at it as hard as they are able. But if the prayer is not that, but this, Lord, this is yours. And because this harvest field is yours, we cry to you for it. Will you send out workers into this field alongside our minister? And in answer to that bold, audacious, and dangerous prayer, God may well say, your prayer is answered. As with a faster beating heart, a young emerging leader in your congregation catches the vision and steps up to the mark. You haven't spotted them before. They've probably been too young. But God had, and was equipping them and raising them up for the task. Another who's been furloughed from work and whose future, maybe even their very future in paid employment, is now uncertain, now begins to see that, well, maybe God is working his purposes out. And they say, maybe for a smile for the first time in months, do you know what? I could do that. And for a time, for a season, as we start to come back to worship and to work together, maybe new things will happen. Still another, isolated and lonely for so long, but clearly with a gift of hospitality and welcome, unable to use it for so long, becomes the locus of a ministry to re-establish community and fellowship. Because they've felt the need themselves, and they know how important it is to be in the same room as people, ministering to loneliness. God, the Lord of the harvest, looks at this mess, this chaos, this bag full of sin and confusion and unrighteousness and shepherdless people all around, harassed and helpless in the Ireland of 2021, and sees not the baleful brokenness of it, but sees the beauty of his boy in the midst of it, speaking truth to falsehood, binding up the brokenhearted, and being Jesus to them with the love of his sending Father. I am sending you. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. And get ready, For my hunch is that he might just send you.